Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. It's Fergus in Chicago. Got a bit of a head cold today, so forgive my voice being a little whatever it is. Anyway, today we are recognizing that Halloween is quickly approaching. And I thought since it is, it would be a great time to talk about the work that Temptations Cat Treats has done for their seasonal Halloween campaign. I believe this is their second year doing it. If you haven't seen the work, you can check it out on our website on strategyshowcase.com. It's so funny. The other work that isn't actually on the website, but you can probably search it out. Some of the display ad work and the headlines that we actually talk about them in the episode are so funny. I love it. If you're not familiar with Temptations are like crack for cats. In fact, the brand's platform is irresistibility, and they've always played with that idea of shaking the pack in the advertising. But what's particularly interesting to me is the Halloween work and how funny it is. So Jack Spicer, planning director at Adam and Eve DDB in London, talks us through the strategy for this year's campaign. This is actually the second year that they've done it. And I think the second year's work is even stronger strategically and creatively than last year's work. Also, towards the end of the episode, Jack and I talk about creative briefs within Adam and Eve. And he talks about the two key questions that are at the core of most creator briefs within their department. And I thought that it was really interesting, and I hope you guys will agree. So here's Jack Spicer. He is planning director at DDB, Adam and Eve DDB in London, with the story behind human-flavored cat treats. Enjoy. So welcome to Jack. It's great to have you on. I'm a big fan of all the work you guys are doing over there. I wanted to do this campaign because it just made me laugh out loud, man, when I saw this work. And I'll tell you, when I read up on it, it made me laugh even more because there's so many parts to this campaign, so many elements to it, and it's just so damn funny. So thrilled to have Jack Spicer on here. Thank you, man.
Thank you very much for having me. I've actually just come back from KFC, inspired from listening to your coverage of their FCK work. quite a good line. Yeah, I'm well prepared, and I'm full and ready, full of energy.
I love it. Yeah, I'm excited to do this. The thing is, I actually have two cats in my household, and the bizarre thing is, I'm actually allergic to the cats. So I'm doing everything I can to keep them happy and keep them away from me. So there's actually some parallels here. So I'm excited about it. And I thought that, let me ask you this, is Temptations as a brand, is that the same brand in every country it sells in, or is it different in different markets?
So it's one of the complexities of obviously the Mars global business, in that in some countries it's Temptations Cat Treats, in the UK it's Dreamies, I think in France it's Catisfactions. I have no idea how the French let that one through. It just seems like the least French thing in the entire world.
That's so great.
but yeah, essentially, I suppose for anyone that doesn't know what it is, Temptations is a range of just surprisingly, astonishingly irresistible cat treats. And they're almost hilarious in the impact that they have on cats. Obviously, cats are like usually kind of cool, calm, and collected. These things kind of send cats wild. They're just kind of ridiculously irresistible. It's one of those products where you kind of laugh at, because like everything that's a treat, people will always say it's irresistible. And then you get a hold of this stuff and you see just how much it turns cats into kind of raging treat addicts quite quickly is something we hear quite often from people.
You know, and that's true. And I have them, I have bags of them here, packets of them here. And it is true, man, that there's obviously an ingredient in there. Do you know what the ingredient is? Is it catnip or the equivalent of cocaine for cats?
This is kind of the thing. I don't know exactly what the ingredients are. It's just kind of they've managed to pull together kind of some sort of kind of leftover extracts of the production process to create these extraordinarily delicious kind of cat treat biscuits. I've got pockets. They're kind of this. The structure of them is this kind of hard outer shell and a soft inside. But there's kind of no magic ingredient. Like we've got a catnip range. And I think some of the stuff we're going to talk about is about the cat is about how we had a range that was about catnip, but it just kind of goes to some base level of just what cats really want.
Tell me about the scope of the brand's offering in terms of its product lines.
So it's fit for many years. It's been around for kind of for 20 or so years. And for most of that time period, it's essentially only been kind of this give one pocket style treat. And it kind of comes back to this need. Most cat owners go, my cat needs variety. And so as a result, there's just a million different kind of flavor iterations, but ultimately the same kind of product. I think only recently we've started getting out of that and moving more into kind of lickables. So there's a kind of puree. It's a puree, but we call it puree. Sorry.
Every pun.
You know what? We try and stay away from them, but on a strategy, in a strategy podcast, you can't not say the words catalyst and category conventions. Like it's
that's great.
There's that. And then I think it's moving more into kind of premiumization and humanization, and like the classic kind of buzzword trends where they're looking for, people are generally looking for things that kind of cue real meat, for example. And so we've got a Meaty Bites range as well.
So tell us about some of the competitors in the major markets.
So I think there's kind of two ways to think about the competition. You've basically got the kind of broadly cats having fun brands, which are kind of your value brands, which are your kind of Purina, Friskies, your Meow Mix style things. And then you've got, at the other end, you've got the kind of real and good and wholesome treats, which are much more premium, which are kind of your Blue Buffaloes at that sort of end. And it's more about, you know, the difference between the two is, you know, it's a classic value premium. Temptations is a value brand. I think it costs, you know, it's $1.50 for a pack. And so you end up with a kind of category dynamic, which is basically, it's joyous and it's fun and it's all about how much fun it is to treat your cat. And then you've got very posh, very premium kind of real and good ingredients.
So the Friskies and the Purinas of the world and the Blue Buffaloes, they've got a food line, not just a treat line. Does Temptations have a food line?
No, it doesn't. So Temptations is interesting in that way because it basically created the category, but it's never expanded out of it. So which is really interesting in terms of what that cues, because it does mean, like, we, you know, candidly, we have a reputation as crack for cats, right? And yeah. Which if you read anything about it, like it's just this incredibly odd brand that like people love and want to post about on TikTok just because it's such a distinctive user experience in a way, which just kind of sounds like kind of planning jargon, but like using it is not like treating a cat with Temptations is the least cat experience you'll kind of ever have in your entire life. And they suddenly become kind of, they suddenly become these kind of, like I said, kind of fiends for it. And I thought it's kind of funny because I think when you're a brand that purely plays in treats, you don't need to worry about the kind of health concerns. And I think that gives us a bit of freedom to talk about, you know, from our brand perspective, where we talk about essentially Temptations is a brand that delivers irresistible treats that allow you to connect with your cat, because cats are fickle and you don't know whether they're going to like you or whatever it might be. But with Temptations, they'll kind of come running every time and you can get affection in that way. But it just allows us to kind of push it, I think, more than potentially some of the food brands can.
So how would you describe its brand platform over the last few years?
So essentially, the platform is kind of all it takes to shake, and it's all about demonstrating the kind of irresistibility of product. But I think as we've evolved the brand and we've moved beyond that core, we talk about it in terms of the kind of core category need, which is about, you treat your cat to show them that you love them. And if they kind of come back, then that's a sign that they kind of care about you and like you in return. So basically, we've got our kind of core thought of all it takes is a shake, but what sits under that is Temptations irresistibility helps you connect with your cat.
So when we talk about, for those who are not familiar, when we talk about the shake, we're talking about shaking the pack. And I think a lot of the creative executions have sort of demonstrated that, literally the physical shaking of the pack, and then your cat comes running to you. So it's that's what we're referring to there. So there is there's this idea that the pack shaking, where did that come from? I mean, because obviously it's sort of one of those distinctive brand assets we hear about these days, right? So where did that start, this idea of shaking the bag?
It's one of those ones that it actually started in kind of research and the way that, and just watching people with the product. And it's just a consistent behavior that everyone does, that because we're the biggest brand in the category, we were able to really own and own better than anyone else could. So we had things, we were doing kind of ethnography, and you'd talk to people and you'd go, all right, well, let's go and kind of treat the, go and treat the cat. And so someone would go to their pantry, go to their cupboard, pull out the temptations, shake the pack, and hey, presto, the cat just kind of would appear as if by magic out of nowhere. And I think if you, it's something that kind of, it's this kind of world's worst kept secret of the kind of online cat community. It's one of those things where, again, like a, such a rare kind of privilege to have in terms of people love the product. And so we'll post videos. This is even not happening on TikTok, which is extraordinary, of people, of cats just going to ridiculous lengths to run and come and get temptations.
I remember, this is a true story. I remember, as I mentioned, I've got two cats. I remember the time when we used to stack cups in the same cupboard as those temptation treats. And so I remember early mornings, when, because I always get up a couple of hours earlier than my wife, and I would try to quietly open that cupboard. And every time I did it, the cats would come running up, because they knew, not only they knew where those treats were, and even the opening of that cupboard ever so quietly drew them up with heavy meows. And so I had to actually put the cups in a different place so that we could actually, you know, not wake the entire family up when the cats come running. So it's all this learned behavior is pretty funny stuff.
I love it. The kind of, we've had so many silly ideas over the years that kind of never go anywhere because they're scientifically impossible, of like indestructible packs and stuff like that, so that the cats can't get into them. When I first got to the UK, I was staying in an Airbnb and I'd started work at Adam and Eve, and I was like, all right, well, I'll just try this product out because I've never heard of it before. And I just started on the business and I was like, all right, let's see how this works. And the cat that was in the Airbnb, I think she was a rescue. She was really, really anxious around people. And I brought these. I brought this yellow pack of Dreamies home. Kind of opened it out, gave her one of gave her one of the treats, and shook the pack. And then she just like had the treat, and then bolted, and then was kind of not interested in me again. And about 2 minutes later, I shook the pack, and I've never seen a cat come running that fast. Like just immediately, like completely transformed my relationship with the cat. And you just sit there, and she worked out that where I'd hidden them in my bag, and would just be like pouring at it constantly. It was excellent. I was just this. It's so nice to have something that's that powerful in terms of like, it's a true story about the product.
So what another thing that drew me to want to do this case is the fact that this, what we're going to be talking about today, is occasion-based in terms of its specifics. So we're going to be talking about Halloween. And what I was drawn to is the idea that you guys have developed this campaign over the last couple of years. It's been at least two or maybe three different seasons. We'll talk about that in a second. But you've developed a Halloween-specific campaign. And I'm curious, how did you get to that idea of doing a Halloween-specific campaign? Because in many categories, doing a campaign for a holiday that lasts a single day, of course, there's a huge setup to it, maybe weeks, maybe even months, for God's sake now. But how did you get to that idea about doing a Halloween campaign? Where did it come from?
I think it's really interesting kind of strategically, because what you see with cats is treating isn't intuitive with cats like it is with dogs. Basically, the treating behavior starts with dogs when you bring them home and you start training them. You train them to sit, to roll over, to play dead, whatever it is. People don't train cats. Something like 8 to 12% of people admit to training their cat. And so what you've got to do, and what we've been trying to do for a long time to get people into this category, is about, it's about how do you tie treating to other things so that people will go, oh, I want X, I will treat my cat to get it. And so the way that we kind of approached it was going, there's a really interesting seasonality strategy in, if we can find the times when people are treating themselves, could we use that as a moment to get people to treat their cats? And so I think when you have that kind of unlock and that insight, it kind of becomes obvious, because when you get to Halloween, Halloween is all about treating. And then you go into the cultural truths that surround cats, and they've been witches, familiars forever. You know, there's movies like Pet Sematary. There's something about cats that's just kind of, it's a bit, they're a bit spooky, they're a bit sinister, they're a bit supernatural. You've got all the world of like black cats and being unlucky and these sorts of things. And so we kind of had, it's about all about treating. It's easy to make it about cats, but no one is treating their cat for this period. So it's basically, how can we bridge the divide between those two things and essentially get people to treat their cat at Halloween, the biggest kind of second biggest treating occasion of the year.
Did DDB, Adam and Eve DDB, working with the client, were you the ones who originally came up with All It Takes Is a Shake? And how many years ago was that?
So All It Takes Is a Shake, I think the strategic work was done kind of 2017, 2018. And the first campaign came out for it, which was a campaign called Cat Borrowers. And that came out in, I think, mid of 2018. And that campaign was all about how people are using temptations to borrow people's cats, kind of borrowing from that kind of hilarious, you know, the cats are at the neighbor's place. But so we had, you know, a kind of Lothario character who had a partner that loved cats. So he would use temptations to get them. And a little girl whose mummy wouldn't let her have a cat. So she would use temptations to get them. And it's all very good, fun kind of product advertising in that way.
She loves cats, so tonight I'll borrow my neighbor's.
My babies.
Temptations Cat Treats.
So let's zero in on Halloween. So it's, I believe this is the second year that you've done a Halloween-specific campaign, is that true?
Yeah, that's correct. So we went really big. It was kind of one of our big bets for last year, because Halloween is so busy because it's a fun season and brands can really push the boat out and do, I think, you know, quite provocative, interesting things in that season. So we kind of had our point was at what we were going to basically try and do was go, okay, every brand is going to be advertising at Halloween, any kind of confectionery, it's their one of their biggest seasons. You know, the competition is not just kind of cat brands. It's about how the hell do you kind of own the cultural conversation.
For your first year, which was last year, tell us about the strategy that you guys took around Halloween and what the idea was for a scaredy cat movie.
So, I mean, I think this is just kind of ridiculous and brilliant and full credit.
That's what's brilliant about it. Exactly. It is ridiculous, but ridiculously good.
So we were looking around. We spent loads of time just kind of digging around. I think Temptations, we talk a lot about kind of internet fame and kind of being talked about in the kind of far corners of the internet. And I think we've spent a lot of time looking around for like, how do people kind of talk about cats and what could be a really nice Halloween theme for cats. So we had, do we talk about witches, familiars, is it All It Takes Is a Shake to summon your familiar, for example, which would just be an incredibly literal version of the kind of brand strategy. But then we kind of found this thing, there was this craze in 2015, 2016, where people worked out that if you put a cucumber behind a cat, and it turns around, it will just jump a million miles in the air. And apparently it's because they're snake. They think it's a snake.
Oh, interesting. I was wondering what the hell it was.
Yeah. And so apparently I could be completely wrong there, but basically it's a cats. We kind of got to this really ridiculous fact, which is that cats are absolutely terrified of very specific fruits and vegetables. And we were like, that's kind of a bonkers fact. Like, can you do something with that? That's just so interesting. Can we have a laugh at the fact that, like, of all the things to be scared of, cats are scared of fruits and veggies? And then we were playing around with kind of, you know, tropes of Halloween, and we were kind of looking for, you know, a slightly different shape of idea, again, something that we could kind of, you know, like make something where the idea shape was not Temptations has said something, but Temptations has done something. And we kind of were settling on the creative team made this leap. They came back and they said, we're going to make a horror film for cats, and it's going to be about cucumbers. And then we were like, well, it's got to have a title. And then they were like, well, it's obviously Scaredy Cat. And we were like, oh my God, how are you going to sell this in? This is absolutely brilliant.
So I'm gonna drop the some of the audio in on this, but can you describe the actual spot? I'll drop it in after you describe it.
So it's a kind of 2 to 3 minute short film, and it's a cat who very conveniently looks like the Temptations cat, who is alone in a house, and we hear things about a mysterious kind of radioactive spill that's happened nearby, and we see this incredibly brave cat essentially walking his way through this very, very spooky haunted house. And so we were just having, they were just having way too much fun with it. Like, there's all sorts of things like, you know, like the jump scare and the classic, like, the lighting moment. And we had, you know, written in the mirror backwards was stuff like cucumbers. And it's just like, it's one of those things that's actually worth a watch because there's, like, so many little details in it. But essentially, it's kind of a two-minute suspenseful film about this little cat as he very bravely navigates this kind of spooky house. And eventually is kind of shocked and stunned and scared had the life scared out of him by the fact that his entire house is surrounded by live ferocious cucumbers.
What's super fun about this is the way that you guys extended it. And, you know, one of the things, and I know that it didn't actually happen in real life, but when I read it, I just laughed out loud, was the idea that you sort of gave this character the name of Cat Damon. And it was this idea of extending this idea into activations. Tell us about these sort of, I mean, even the idea of interviewing the director, did some of that stuff happen in the sort of extension and activation of the idea outside of the hero video?
Yeah, so I think actually this is like the hero video is brilliant and the idea behind the hero video is brilliant, but I think full credit to Al, we have just an astonishingly good kind of social department who kind of call themselves a social department, but really they're just the absolute masters of either kind of coming up with kind of brilliant proactive stuff that's going to get famous on the internet or taking a central idea and making it just huge. And so I spoke to the head of I think he's executive content director now, a fellow called Simon Adamson, and our head of content, Jess Taylor. And the conversation we had was, tell my team to launch this like it's a horror film and launch, give it teaser trailers, do interviews with the cast. And so we took that approach. So we very sadly could not get the Cat Damon idea away. notorious for not having any of that, but we got, you know, we launched it. We had a live premiere that was watched by, you know, a couple of 100,000 people, and who kind of all loved it. And then we got a whole bunch of influencers to watch it and review it. I talked about earlier about how the Halloween range gives you, you know, you get the incremental shelf space. So we had a specific range called Creepy Cucumber Edition, and the pack is literally a cat jumping away from a cucumber. It's just an absolute masterpiece of graphic design for a guy called Andre Sarwitz. And
were you able to do the in-store idea with the cucumber decals everywhere around the country?
We weren't able to put the cat treats in with the actual cucumber section that was pulled out, but we had some really great point of sale like lovely little boxes that you could kind of take it home in that kind of told the story of what was going on.
For me, I think as we talk about this year's campaign, it seems to me that you guys went a little bit deeper in sort of understanding nuances. You know, the cucumber idea, I think, was already in popular culture. People well recognized that, and that set up the opportunity for that idea. But it seems to me in year two, you found something that people don't know anything about, which I think sort of increases the level of interest and intrigue in this year's campaign. Tell me about where this whole idea for this for year two came from. Did you guys, were you guys talking to cat owners, or were you just doing sort of syndicated research and reading stuff to uncover the insight that sort of drove year two?
So year two was funny. I was having conversations with our chief strategy officer, Martin Beverly, who runs all of the John Lewis work. Obviously John Lewis, massive in the UK and massive for Christmas. And kind of, we were going, can Halloween be our John Lewis Christmas? Can we every year do something ridiculous that just kind of captures people's attention and really pushes it out there? And at the time we were kind of thinking, you know, is this actually, is the right thing to do here to every year put out a horror film or every, you know, or every year put out a Halloween film? So, you know, we were talking about, I mentioned before about kind of black cats and luck. So we're having a conversation about like, do we just put a brief in into the creative department that was about just telling the story of a little black cat who's kind of got a problem with his luck or whatever it might be.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of like,
we were so
like,
softer, more emotional, less humorous, more emotional.
Yeah. And I think for that, you know, well, I think we would have tried to, it wouldn't have been right to do it kind of more emotionally, but I think what we were looking for was kind of something that could take the trope of Halloween that people could recognize and then kind of own it in a way that John Lewis did. But then I think learning from the previous year, one of the things that really stood out to us is, you know, I mentioned pack format innovation and just going, we're just going to do something interesting with the pack and see what we can kind of push in that way. And actually the insight was one that, because there's kind of two parts of the Temptations insight, right? Like there's one that's about, and with this campaign, half of it was about getting to the incredibly good, interesting starting point, which I'll talk about in a sec. But then it's about how do you kind of backfit this in a way that people will recognize? And so essentially my creative directors, two absolute geniuses called Colin Booth and Ben Stillitz. Colin, when he's got a good idea, he will email me like a one-liner and he won't tell me what the idea is. And so he emails me this one-liner and he goes, did you know that if cats were bigger, they'd eat us? And I was like, what? And then he replied with, we're doing human flavored treats for Halloween. And I was like, oh, not again.
So that came out of Colin? That
it came out of them. The work itself was written by a creative team called JT and Clarissa, who are just phenomenal. They do all of our really good, weird Temptations work. But basically, I was speaking to them before, and I was like, guys, do you want to come on this podcast? And they were like, no, just go claim credit for our idea. and I was like, rude. But I think what was really good about it, so I think, you know, we got to that idea, but then we were like, all right, what do we do with this idea? It's like human flavored treats. That's completely mad. What can we actually kind of get to? And so we were actually in, We were at the same time we were working on kind of a broad equity campaign as well. And we went in, our chief creative officer, Rick Brim, was like, I love this idea. We you know, go away and think about it and flesh it out. And he went into a meeting to sell this other work with the chief marketer of Mars, a guy called Craig Neely. And Craig is just an unbelievably good marketer. He can smell a good idea an absolute mile off. And Rick goes in and you know, sells him this other stuff and had a, by all accounts, a very good meeting. And then Craig goes, is there anything else you want to show me? And then Rick goes, well, we do have this idea for human flavored treats. and it's just brilliant. And then he was like, go and make it. And we were like, All right, amazing. Let's go and do it.
So the thing that struck me, I'm just going to read something that I have here in front of me. It kind of sets this whole thing up too, but it says it's been proven that cats share psychological similarities with lions and tigers. So if they were bigger and got a chance, they'd take you down. It's great. I mean, what a setup. I love that.
It's one of those. Rick was actually talking about this in one of our, we had a kind of strategy meeting a couple of weeks ago, and Rick was just like, some ideas just kind of write themselves. And it was like, obviously they made an absolutely phenomenal leap there. But so, you know, human flavored treats, it's just inspired. It's just so good. I think where it got really interesting was going, so on Temptations, I think the thing that we, from a planning perspective, the thing that we kind of hold ourselves tightly to is we want to be like really funny, right? But the way that, you know, there is a way you can be funny with cats, which is just kind of cat videos, right? And I think we kind of wanted to, there's a thing with the kind of cat person who as like a bullseye audience and cat people who they're a bit funny, they're a bit different. And I think probably like to think of themselves as a bit kind of more intellectually interesting than the average dog owner. So we've kind of hold ourselves true to this idea that what we want is in our advertising, we want to do stuff that kind of makes them smile with like a level of kind of wit. And I think our old group managing director who used to run the Mars account, a woman called Fiona, she just called it beautifully observed insight. And the thing that works through all of these film executions is it's not just kind of cats eating people. It's stuff that cats do normally that could actually be them trying to eat you. And so the whole pitch was about, you know, if a cat's watching you in the bath, it's kind of watching you bubble and watching you cook. And if a cat's watching you sleep, it might, maybe it's actually just waiting to strike. And like all of it, we had other examples, like if a cat's licking you, it's just sampling you.
To that exact point, these are rough comped headlines. It says, cats are basically lions. You are basically meat. Is your cat licking you out of affection or checking to see if you need extra seasoning? Most people know they're murderers. Some even rub their bellies and tickle their chins.
Jesus. I always forget that one. That's such a good one. Yeah. It's a kind of writer's dream. But I think all of it is just kind of like, it's about taking stuff cats do and then adding a level of interpretation on top of it that makes it, maybe this is actually, like you kind of wanted people to come out of it going, oh, hang on. And kind of get the humor out of it in that way.
Yeah, here's my favorite line. It says, I'm not sure if this ever was turned into a piece of advertising, but it says, the chance of getting killed by your cat is low, but not zero. That's so great. Oh man, it's so great. So would you say that? What would you say was the planner's brief, your brief, into the creatives that ultimately spurred that one-liner that Colin delivered to you in that email?
So it's kind of one of these things where there wasn't a formal brief per se, but a lot of conversation.
Good.
The conversation was, and it was mainly, I think everyone was agreed. Like the whole team was like, how the hell do we beat, you know, a horror movie for cats? And the whole team was basically aligned. We are going to do something that wins at Halloween. I think the debate was around how we do that and what's going to be the thing that brings everything together, and what's going to be like the, you know, our head of planning, Will Grundy, calls it the "Did you know that" kind of brief. Where you just drop a really interesting fact on someone and then turn that into a brilliant idea. So I think, you know, at no point did I write a brief that said, cats are trying to eat you. But I think it was one of those things that kind of evolved through lots of, we had four or five conversations. My business director at the time, Loella Collier, and I, with just Ben and Colin, our CDs, who just absolutely, man, just do the best stuff all the time. They did like Harvey Nichols Shoplifters and this sort of thing.
Oh, man, nice.
And you're just like, I just find this hysterical. I'm like, there's little old me from Australia just telling those guys what to do. And it's just like, it's comical. I wish there was kind of a formal brief for it, but it's actually kind of one of those cool things where it just kind of evolved through a whole series of conversations.
So a lot of sort of a common theme that's bubbles up in a lot of things that I've been doing lately within the show and then in speeches and conferences is the idea of the brief. And I have people may know that I'm much more a fan of briefings than briefs. And what I find really interesting about what you guys at Adam and Eve DDB do, you're encouraged to submit sort of thought starter creative ideas as part of your briefings. And the more I talk to people, the more popular or the more common this actually seems to be. But it, in many circles, is discouraged. In many creative circles, is discouraged because some agency cultures, some creative cultures don't want ideas from planners. They just want strategy, which I think is ridiculous. So I'm curious, how do you approach these sort of early thought starter ideas? What form do they take? And then the follow-up question would be, where do you know if you've gone too far with that idea, or is there even that line at Adam and Eve DDB?
So I mean, it starts with Martin and Rick at Adam and Eve. I know you've had a few of us on and they've probably said something similar, and I'm pretty sure I'm stealing someone's line here from another podcast that one of my colleagues was on. But it starts with Martin Beverley, CSO, Rick Brim, CCO, who just both have the best nose for an idea of just anyone you've ever met in your entire life. They can smell it anywhere. And Martin is an extraordinarily creative planner who... also, like, if Martin likes a thought you've had, you're in just unbelievably good shape. Drop everything and go and do it. Rick believes that an idea can come from anywhere. And so, you know, Rick, again, you know, he was talking to the planning department the other day and he said, it is so important that the planning department kind of comes to the creative department with like half-formed ideas and weird thoughts and give us these things, because it's what we live off and it's what we leap off and you know, help us to have these ideas is kind of the attitude to it. I think the thought starter for me is going, it's one of those weird things, because it kind of comes from anywhere. It's usually like an interesting fact or an interesting stat. And, you know, it's the did you know that, as a kind of opening gambit to the kind of thought starter.
And it's a statement, right? It's a sentence really, right?
That's exactly it. So we would do like the most common format is like, did you know that X, what if we did Y? So, you know, did you know that cats are afraid of cucumbers? What if we made a horror film for cats about them?
Yeah.
For example. But like, I think to the kind of point around, I mean, Ben and Colin let me pitch a line to them the other day, which was the best thing that's ever happened to me in my career. But you've gone too far when you start trying to pitch films, for example. So it's basically...
When you start to what? Pitch what?
Sorry. If you start to pitch like a film script, whenever I try to like go, what if it was a film about this? Usually... that's where kind of I've seen creative teams just go, no, that's our job, go away. But if you come to them with, here's a really ridiculous idea that I've had, would you be kind of interested in playing around with that? That's where they get kind of excited and interested, and they kind of build on it.
What were those two things again? You said it was a did you know, and what was, I think I screwed that up here. What were those two things?
It's the did you know that.
Did you know that? Okay.
So, it's just like a great starting point.
Yeah, it is.
And then it's just, what if we did this? And I think that is great as a way of thinking, because it basically goes, did you know something? What if, here's where it takes me. And it immediately gets you out of ideas that are kind of immediately just only write film. It gets you into the kind of famous culture kind of borrowing and culture making sort of ideas that I think generally like are aiming for. Like the stuff that gets people talked about is brands doing stuff, not saying stuff. You've obviously got to get the saying stuff right, but it's the icing on the cake is when you can kind of become famous for doing something.
Yeah, that's really helpful to hear. I think people are going to just love that because it's a terrific way to frame it. And I think a lot of people struggle with about how far to take it. I think you have to learn, obviously, because I think some teams are going to be more tolerant than others and they're going to work differently. And there is no, as we always say here, there is no one way to do things. You got to find the way to do it that works for the culture of your agency. But that's did you know that? And what if we did this is a great way of framing it. So let's talk about the idea. So you guys get that one sentence from Colin. Then what happens? What's the idea that you guys end up pitching and producing?
Previous year, we had made Horror Film for Cats. And with that fact, we thought, all right, Temptations is all about irresistibility. If a cat's going to eat you, let's stop people from being eaten. And we'll give people a way to keep their cats satisfied at Halloween and we'll make human flavored treats. And it's just the most ridiculous idea I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah, it's kind of like the idea of like, give your cat an alternative to eating you.
It's just tremendous. It really is. It's just one of those things where you can kind of push it in a million different directions, and it writes such good advertising. It writes such good kind of extension ideas, and it's just fantastic.
So describe the spots. I know there's like two or three of them that got produced, right? I think I've seen two over here.
So we made two. So we made Sleep Watching, and we made Bath. We made Stew or Bath Time. And in both, Mars only ever makes 15 seconds, which, you know, adds to the kind of degree of difficulty. So you have to basically get an idea across, make a gag really quickly, and then get the product in there. And so in our first one, Sleep Watching, we essentially have a character in his bed whispering to camera saying, I read that if cats were bigger, they'd try and eat us. And essentially saying, so this Halloween, I'm keeping him satisfied with these new human flavored temptations. And there's just the brilliant kind of the most astonishing cat performance I've ever seen. Like,
that's right. Yeah, it's true. Cause it's sitting over his shoulder on the, almost on the bedstand, right?
That's exactly it. And it's just kind of, you know, the cat sitting behind him and you hear the pack shake and the cat just kind of jerks its head to look at him.
I read that if our cats were bigger, they'd try to eat us. So this Halloween, I'm going to keep him satisfied with these.
Treat your cat to Temptations, Tasty Human, before they treat themselves to you.
What about the second spot?
So the second spot was Stew. And so again, it's kind of like, what's the easily recognizable cat truth here that we're dramatizing? And it was just cats love watching people in the bath. So in this one, we see a fella sitting in the bath with his human flavored treats. And he says exactly the same thing. You know, I read that if cats were bigger, they'd try to eat us. And he shakes his pack.
I read that if our cats were bigger, they'd try to eat us. Creepy, right? That's why this Halloween I'm treating him of these.
Good kitty.
Treat your cat to Temptations, Tasty Human, before they treat themselves to you.
How did you guys activate this on social, etc.? How did you sort of roll it out? We talked earlier about how you did it with Horror Movie, but how did you roll this one out?
So we had a little bit less scope on this one to kind of push it. So I think we were much more reliant on the PR behind it. So for this one, we probably made a little bit less, but where it started to get really interesting was in how we started to extend it through more contextual sales driving channels. So we had our kind of the previous year we'd relied on how do we kind of flesh this out through a whole kind of online influencer channel and how do we show up in the most contextually interesting places. With this, we looked at, well, what would be other interesting ways to start kind of talking to people at times where it might be relevant. So we talked about kind of doing different contextual bumpers. So saying things like cats are at their hungriest when they first wake up, you know, keep them satisfied with new human flavor. And you might see that in the morning. And then it might say, you know, something like a sleep tight, keep them satisfied with tasty human flavor. And you'd have kind of a creepy look at a looking cat at night. And so we kind of have this whole suite of really interesting kind of sales driving stuff that we could personalize based on time. We had other ones that were based on whether you treated people or not. So we had things like a study show that your cat's curious about eating you, better get on their good side, try tasty human flavor. We had things like competitor bias, you know, science. So for people that weren't treating with temptations, science tells us that your cat is thinking about eating you. Only one treat can stop them. Try new tasty human flavor. And then kind of for the more broad temptations bar, we just had kind of, you know, studies show that your cat wants to snack on humans. Make sure it isn't you. Try tasty human flavor.
So I'm reminded of, and I'm wondering if you guys followed anything of a similar vein here, because I'm reminded of Marmite. I had Martin Beverly on and Will Grundy, and we talked, I think it was Will Grundy on that one. Maybe it wasn't. Might have been David Mortimer. I'm not sure, but it was, it was one of those two. But we were talking about Marmite and the whole idea behind the science of taste, and it was for Marmites. You either love it or hate it. And so the whole, one of the aspects of the idea was there a science? Was there a genetic connection or some genetic marker that determined whether you would love the taste or hate the taste of Marmite? So there was almost a science, there was a report done, and then there was some conclusions to it. And I'm wondering in this case, because was there any science behind this idea or any sort of psychological analysis that you could use in PR around the idea that maybe your cat does want to eat you? I mean, was there anything in that?
Yeah, so it's kind of hilarious in the way that it kind of worked as it is true that there's actually we would never put this in PR because it's a bit grim, but like there are actually quite a few stories out there of like someone who lives alone dying and their cat would just eat them. Yeah, it's like one of those things where you're like, oh, it's a bit grim. The angle on it that. You know, there is genuine, you know, truth in science. Say, you know, cats are effectively small tigers. they behave in the same way. So it's one of those things where it kind of works because it's true, but it's also works because people can kind of see it in their cats.
So let's talk about the product. So was this just a package redesign of an existing product, or was there really some sort of a new product that was developed to actually taste human-like?
What we created was, so there's a range of temptations called mix-ups. And what we wanted to create was essentially like, what would be our flavor combination and variety combination that would feel most like it was kind of tasty human flavored? And so we borrowed from an existing lineup and popped in chicken, liver and beef flavors. And that felt quite, you know, it was when you put it on a pack next to a cat wearing a wizard's hat who's cooking a human in a pot, I think it kind of did the job.
Did you find that there is a halo effect across the product line when you do these Halloween treats?
Yeah, so I can't obviously give you kind of business kind of commercial results. I can kind of give you some headlines.
That's fine.
So just by having the kind of seasonal, a really interesting, for Creepy Cucumber edition in 2020, just by having that edition, we, I think, effectively doubled our sales of our kind of seasonal SKU, right? But the thing about that is it's quite small. Like that, it's not the majority of what goes on the shelf. We didn't completely replace the kind of shelf. Where it gets really interesting is kind of the power of you combine kind of a fame-driving idea that gets talked about a lot with something that can work really hard at shelf and then works really hard in particularly kind of conversion social even. So it kind of was doing a job on salience, a job on conversion, a job at shelf, And so we had kind of our ROIs were going up by kind of, we were in the kind of 4 to 5 to 6 range. And usually we'd be kind of in the 2s, right? So like it was one of those things where fame actually made our conversion driving work at Shelf better and work harder.
It's Jack Spicer, planning director at Adam and Eve DDB in London. Thanks for coming on, Jack. Great case, great work.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll see everybody in the next episode.